is the Cancer Research UK podcast. Hello, I'm Dr. Kat Arney. In this month's podcast, we'll be finding out how our cells repair damage to DNA and why this is so important in the development of cancer. Plus, we unveil the first in a series of National Cancer Research UK centres. Up later, we hear about the importance of cervical screening.
I would strongly advise any woman to take up her appointment if she's invited to go for cervical screening, because it's actually a really good test. It actually prevents cancer from developing.
But first, here's the news with Nell Barry.
Thanks, Kat. A Cancer Research UK funded study of over 1 million women has shown that drinking just 1 or 2 units of alcohol a day increases the risk of cancer. 2 units is roughly the amount in a glass of wine or a pint of beer. The latest results from the Million Women study were published in the Journal of the National Cancer Institute and show that even drinking small amounts of alcohol can increase the risk of 7 types of cancer, including breast, bowel and mouth cancer. The researchers think that alcohol causes around 5,000 cases of breast cancer every year in the UK. Dr. Leslie Walker, Director of Cancer Information at Cancer Research UK, explains what this finding means for women.
Fundamentally, the message is that the less you drink, the lower your risk. And one of the things about this study is that it has given us a very clear indication that there is a risk associated with moderate drinking. That is, you know, maybe 1 drink every day. Cancer Research UK is not putting out a hard and fast message about how much you should or shouldn't drink, but clearly the data shows that the less you drink, the lower your risk.
Cancer Research UK's chief scientist, Professor Sir David Lane, and his team have made a new discovery about P53, an important gene that normally protects us from cancer. P53 is known to be faulty in the majority of cancers. Using zebrafish, the researchers found that different versions of P53, known as isoforms, play distinct roles within the cell, helping to maintain the balance between life and death. But in cancer, these controls go haywire, so damaged cells multiply out of control. Here's Professor Lane explaining more about the importance of his research.
Because we found this same isoform in humans, there are many issues about whether this new discovery will also be important for our understanding of P53 in human cancer. And we think that it will. We know that the P53 response is very highly regulated. Tiny differences in the level of the response affect human aging and the frequency of cancer development, and also more recently, fertility. So finding a new pathway that can control, feedback and regulate the P53 response, we think is going to be very exciting.
And finally, our Science Update blog has been nominated for an award. The blog is nominated in Online Research Information category in the Association of Medical Research Charities annual Science Communication Awards. Since its launch last year, over 100,000 people have visited the blog, looking for reliable information about cancer stories in the news.
Thanks, Nell. You can check out our Science Update blog at scienceblog.cancerresearchuk.org. And if you want to find out more about these stories or get the latest from the charity's scientists and researchers around the world, then have a look at our news and resources website. That's info.cancerresearchuk.org. Cancer Research UK recently announced the first in a series of national centres of excellence, which opened in Birmingham in February. The Liverpool centre's now opened, and other major cities are set to follow over the coming year. When you think of the words cancer centre, you probably think of a big research building or a hospital wing, but these new Cancer Research UK centres are different. They're virtual centres. The aim is to bring our scientists together with university researchers and local NHS doctors and nurses to work together to push new discoveries from the lab to the clinic as fast as possible. Each centre will have its own strategy and will have specific areas of excellence that it will particularly focus on. Here's the director of the Birmingham Cancer Research UK Centre, Professor Paul Moss, to explain more about the centre and how it will work.
Well, the new centre is a really exciting vision because for the first time it's really going to bring together all forms of cancer research at many centres across the country. And it's really trying to facilitate interactions between scientists and doctors and translate exciting science into clinical practice as quickly as possible. As you will know, Cancer Research UK envisaged these centres being rolled across the whole country at the areas of expertise, but at Birmingham we're delighted that we're going to be the first centre in the country.
And what is Birmingham's key area of focus going to be?
Birmingham is a large cancer research centre, as befits, of course, the population base in this area. And we've got a number of strengths in basic science, such as how viruses can cause cancer, how genes disrupt cells to cause cancer, and also in gene therapy. But I like to think that what we are particularly strong on is in the translational area, that is how we facilitate basic research into clinical trials and finally into patient therapy, and that's something we've really been developing strongly in the last few years.
And why is it so important that we're setting up these centres now? Why is now the right time to be doing this?
It's really quite hard for people and even doctors to appreciate quite how remarkable the advances in the knowledge about cancer have been in the last 20 years. We now have a tremendous understanding about how a cell becomes malignant, the changes that make a cancer develop. And we are beginning to see new medicines being developed which take advantage of this knowledge. And so there's an amazing opportunity over the next few decades, perhaps 20 or 30 years, to control many types of cancer in a far more effective way than we have been able to do in recent times. So it's a tremendously exciting time for cancer research.
And where do you hope you'll be with the Birmingham Centre in, say, 5 years?
We've worked with Cancer Research UK to set up a number of goals for the medium term. We will certainly be envisaging quite considerable advances in basic research in a number of areas, and we will promise to set up even more clinical trials and translate our therapies into practice. But there are other things as well. We want to really work with the communities across the West Midlands to improve understanding and knowledge about what causes cancer, how to prevent cancer, and that's a very important aim. And finally, training is important. We need to get bright young doctors and nurses and all sorts of people working in cancer at this exciting time. So we'll be playing our part in training as well.
DNA is the instruction manual within all our cells, and damaged DNA is at the heart of cancer, as faulty DNA means faulty genes, which leads to cells multiplying out of control and forming tumours. Our DNA is constantly under attack from substances in our environment, such as tobacco smoke, and even from the chemical reactions that provide energy within our cells. Simon Bolton is the head of the DNA Damage Response Lab at the Clare Hall Laboratories in Hertfordshire. He spoke to our reporter Anna Lacey about DNA damage, DNA repair, and what this all has to do with cancer.
Everybody inherits DNA from their parents, and that information needs to be maintained at a very high level. If you lose any of that information or it becomes damaged, then there will be problems in interpreting that blueprint, and it's those that give rise to cancer. So the reason why DNA repair and DNA damage sensing is so important for cancer is because these are the machines that exist in our cells to detect and repair damage to the blueprint. So if you don't have these repair or sensing mechanisms in place, then damages to the blueprint will go left unrepaired. Essentially, these changes will become permanent, and this will lead to accelerated problems and ultimately tumorigenesis.
So what kind of things will cause damage to our DNA?
People will be familiar with UV light from the sun. They cause changes to the DNA in your skin, and many people will be aware of melanoma. These are frequently caused by excessive damage to DNA caused by sunlight. But it's very important to realise that damage within us is occurring all the time. And the very act of our cells living, metabolising, we produce energy, and certain byproducts of that, for example, what are called free radicals, are highly reactive species that can react with DNA and can change it. And they are, that's DNA damage. And that's not caused by something like UV light. It's part of the living process. So your living, unfortunately, causes problems and challenges to DNA, and they must be repaired as well.
Because DNA is naturally damaged all the time, our bodies have evolved special DNA repair machines to fix it. However, sometimes the DNA damage occurs in the machines themselves, meaning that they stop working properly.
And what we've discovered over, using basic research is that defects in one specific type of repair mechanism leads to a specific kind of cancer. So, you know, a very good paradigm for this is a disease called xeroderma pigmentosum. This is defective in a DNA repair process called nucleotide excision repair. And if you're defective for that, then you get a lot of skin cancers.
Although researchers know that broken DNA repair machines can lead to cancer, no one knows exactly how the machines work when they aren't broken. It's important to know this because whatever it is the machines are fixing stops cancers from developing. So if Simon studies the repair process, he'll be able to follow the machines to see where the DNA went wrong. To do this, Simon and his team are helped by an extremely useful organism.
We use a worm. It's called C. elegans. It grows in the soil. I suppose the most important discovery from my lab was using a genetic approach in the worm. We discovered a gene that had been sought by the repair field for about 3 decades. And we have found, using the worm and then extrapolating our findings to humans, we've worked out how this thing works.
It's become clear in recent years that cancers are as unique as our own genetic blueprint. And as a result, we need to use genetics to develop drugs that home in on the cancer without harming healthy cells.
These are the new generation and the next generation of drugs. So what we're hoping to do is, by improving the understanding of how DNA repair processes work, you can, for example, improve the efficacy of chemotherapy or radiation treatments, for example, by providing a drug that sensitizes a tumor to radiotherapy so you can use much lower doses than what you currently have. That would be an obvious advantage, you know, because then if you have lower dose, you'd have less side effects and less influence on the normal cells in your body.
So it seems that some of the answers we're looking for in cancer will come from rather unlikely places. It could be from a sea urchin egg or a fruit fly or even a worm.
It's not easy. We're basically trying to fill in a blank book of knowledge.
Cervical cancer's been in the news this month as a result of reality TV star Jade Goody's diagnosis with the disease. While this is obviously a desperately sad time for Jade and her family, as it is for anyone going through cancer, we've seen a big increase in the number of people looking for information about cervical cancer and its symptoms, and about the national screening programme for the disease. I spoke to one of our cancer information nurses, Jean Slocum, to find out more about the importance of screening and the symptoms women should look out for.
I would strongly advise any woman to take up her appointment if she's invited to go for cervical screening, because it's actually a really good test. It actually prevents cancer from developing. The aim of the cervical cancer screening programme is to detect abnormal cells that might one day turn into cancer if they were left untreated. So it really does prevent a lot of women from developing cervical cancer.
And how often are women invited for screening? How often can you expect to be invited?
Generally speaking, women are asked to go about every 3 years, but once you get older, about 45, if you've had no problems in the past, it might go down to 5 yearly.
As well as the screening test, what sort of symptoms should women be thinking about, should be looking out for?
Screening is good, but no test is absolutely completely 100% infallible. So if somebody does have symptoms, even if they've been screened, yes, certainly go to your doctor and get them checked out. But it's very important to remember they're probably not going to be cervical cancer, but only your doctor can tell. Basically speaking, anything that's unusual for them, perhaps a discharge that's changed, particularly if it might be blood stained or very unpleasant, bleeding between sex, pain during sex if that's never happened before, and maybe any kind of discomfort that's unusual for them.
There's more about cervical cancer on our Cancer Help UK website. That's www.cancerhelp.org.uk. Well, we've reached the end once more, so I hope you've enjoyed this month's podcast. You can keep up to date with all the latest progress in research from our science blog, that's scienceblog.cancerresearchuk.org, and please do let us know what you think of this podcast by leaving feedback on the blog or by emailing your comments to podcast@cancer.org.uk. I'll be back next month with all the latest news from Cancer Research UK, so until then, goodbye.